Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
The world is trying to get it together, trying to help their fellow man, hoping we can make it better. Do you really think we can?
Welcome everybody to Blog Talk Radio and The Catch. We are so excited to be with you this time, and this is our second week. Last week we had McNair Wilson with us, and we'll even tell you a little bit later how you can hear that if you missed it. It's going to be fantastic. We had a great time with McNair, and to this time, you know, McNair is a humorist. This time is a little more serious, and we're going to talk a very special guest who has been through some really dark times in life and come through with an incredible story. You're not going to want to miss it. So right now we've got Marty is with us. Hi, Marty.
Hello, everybody.
Excited to have Marty with us, especially tonight. She's, you know, we. Marty is the one that dragged me to Isaiah House. Those of you who know us from The Catch.
Okay, that was it.
Okay. And so tonight, especially in relationship to this new guest, Marty's going to be really important to have. I'm going to lean on her a lot. She's so concerned about women who have been had the bad lot in life, you know, when bad things happening to good people. And so she's real sensitive to that. I'm so glad that Marty's with us. And then we also have with us, back again, our inimitable producer, Gunnar Simonsen, coming from up in Portland, Oregon. Gunnar, how are you doing today?
Good, good. How are you and Marty doing? I understand you guys are broadcasting. Hey, how are you guys doing? You guys are broadcasting in darkness tonight. What's going on?
Utter darkness.
Well, you know, it's a Blog Talk Radio by candlelight is what we've got tonight.
Okay.
And it was just one of those things. We had the Edison Company and the city of Laguna Beach decided that we need new telephone poles on our street.
Oh.
And so they are out there with a big crew, and they have been, since 9 o'clock this morning, replacing all the telephone poles on Oak Street, and we have been without power since then. And so now we were supposed to be on by 6, but they've delayed it till 7, so this is going to be an adventure tonight. we've got the candles going. It's a little like truth here.
Wow. You got the candles. Should I be serenading you both? Let it go, let it be. So, you know, I can't even imagine. I can't even believe I just sang right there. But I can't imagine, you know, think about this for a second, John and Marty. You know, next week they're going to be performing a nationwide test, I believe, on the power grid to see where the weaknesses are. And can you imagine what we would do if our power was out for like a week and we couldn't have access to Facebook and Twitter? I mean, what would that be like?
Wow. Wow. It would be, well, to tell you the truth, I think it would be glorious. You know, that, I don't know, that's the way I react to things like that. It would be forced. Well, you know, I seem to remember when every once in a while, when our kids were in school, they would have one week, no electronics, you know, no TV, no cell phones, no nothing. And, you know, those were great weeks.
Sure.
And,
You know, what's interesting about that, John, is that I think I was reading somewhere recently that this high school graduating class of 2016, just a few years away, will be like the first class that graduates that all they will know is the internet generation. I mean, can you believe that? I mean, how far we've come in such a short time.
Yes. Yes, that's amazing, and it's a challenge for old guys like us, you know, to be immigrants in their country, you know.
Well, you're doing a good job though on that, John. I mean, I'm seeing you.
I'm learning.
You guys are on Twitter lately. I mean, what's that experience been like?
Hey, it's been fun. It's been fun to learn some of this stuff. So, and you know, you get a little bit better every day, and.
Yeah.
It's been fun hearing from folks out there and being retweeted a few times. So we're starting to get there. We're getting there.
That's amazing. But here we are tonight. Yeah, go ahead, Marty. What's that?
I was going to say about one-fourth of our audience at the Catch are people under 24. And so with the Internet, which is their church, we are attracting many, many, many people from universities. So it wouldn't be a surprise to me that Twitter welcomed John with open arms. They were waiting for him.
Yes. Absolutely. It's been fun to see you both on there. But yet here we are tonight, broadcasting by darkness in your house with the candles lit because the power is out. Boy, you ready to go on that, huh? You ready?
Thank the Lord for cell phones. And Gunnar, what was the verse you had? You told me earlier tonight when we were talking about this.
It was, a great verse from Psalm 112, and it was in the original translation of the New Living Translation. It was, when darkness overtakes the godly, light will come bursting in.
Wow. That's fantastic. I love that. And Gunnar, I can't think of a better way to introduce our guest. Can you?
Yeah. No, absolutely not. You know, we think about, you know, what we're going to be talking about here and just the next few brief moments here, a dark topic, you know, and we're going to be talking to a young woman that is who is bringing a bright light to this conversation and is an amazing story, is an amazing person, John, and I think that the audience is really going to gain a lot of knowledge and a lot of understanding, you know, of something that we all need to get and be a part of and understand. And so I think this time with Jess is going to be incredible. So I'll let you go ahead and introduce Jess, and we'll bring her in.
Jess, are you here with us?
Can you hear me? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Oh, you're beautiful.
Fabulous.
You're nice and clear. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Jess Richardson. And
yes.
She is our guest. And Jess, tell us a little bit about let's just jump in. I'd love to jump in right into the present and find out, you know, what you're doing right now and give us a little picture.
Absolutely. Can I spin off of your darkness and light that you had going there?
That would be great.
Because when I came out of darkness and I found light, light, standing in the middle of the light, does not shine. It just adds to the light, but light can only be so light, and you can't see the brightness of your light until you go back into darkness. And there's something that's very significant about that, about coming out of the darkness, understanding and defining your light, and then going back into the darkness, because that's where your light can truly shine.
Wow.
Go ahead.
Is that what you're doing, Jess?
Yeah, well, that is, and I would like to think it is. you never know. But I didn't understand until 4 years ago what trafficking even was. Today, I'm the CEO of a nonprofit called One Dream. You can find us online at onedreammovement.org. But I look back 4 years and wonder how I got here, because I never anticipated, you know, being the CEO of an organization that was fighting trafficking and really standing for the rights of individuals regardless of where they've been. But it was that day 4 years ago when I first heard about trafficking and I realized that it was something that I had experienced. And it was the first time when I heard about trafficking that I was ever told that my experiences in my teenage years weren't my fault. It was the first time that shame was truly removed. And I thought, you know, by this time, 4 years ago, I was a mother of four children, and I was running my own business. I was very networked in the community. I did lots of volunteer work. And I thought, if I had missed this, how many other people out there just like me also missed it? And I knew I had to go public with my story, and I had to share with the world, because I seem to be the most unsuspecting trafficking survivor. I'm 34 years old and white, and you know, blondish brown hair. I'm very normal. I drive a white minivan. it doesn't get any more normal and mainstream than that. And yet, if it happened to me, how many other people out there are the same way?
Jess, am I hearing you correctly? Am I hearing you saying that you didn't know you were being trafficked when this was going on?
Oh, absolutely not. Well, let me back up for a minute and paint a bigger picture of my life story, so you can understand how and why people do things. We all do things for reasons. It's really just understanding the reasons why we do things that really makes it not necessarily okay, but it makes it understandable. So I was born to two parents that loved me very much. They were excited. I was their first and only child. I ended up being sexually abused by some neighbor boys. They were just teenagers themselves when I was 4 and 5 years old. And so this laid the groundwork of being only wanted for my body and only being desired for sex. But it was also what I confused as love, because most young childhood sexual abuse is very affectionate and gentle, which leaves the survivor with a feeling of guilt, you know, that they did something to deserve that.
Wow.
We moved away when I was 5, and that stopped. I'm just going very fast for the sake of time.
Sure.
And then when I was 10 years old, my father was murdered in a homicide-suicide, also by a teenager. And at this point, those three teenage boys that raped me for those 2 years when I was a little girl, and then the young man who killed my father, they were all between the ages of 13 and 19 years old. And
wow.
How my heart has really come to forgive everybody, including my pimp that I'll get to in a minute, is that these are children that don't just wake up one day and say, boy, I want to rape a little girl next door, or maybe I'm just going to kill someone today. That these are cycles of abuse that are really the systemic issue that promote everything from unhealthy relationships to domestic violence to trafficking, bullying, suicide, all the host of injustices that we see in the world today come out of not being heard or understood and the abuse that we have as a child. So my life just kind of went on, and I was seeking attention and affection and the nurturing of a family that I just couldn't have, because now I was left with a single mom that had to go back to work full-time to be able to support her and I. And my life just spiraled out of control. I was that standard rebellious teenager that no one really knew what to do with. But I dropped out of high school right before the end of my 10th grade year, PA. I was still on honor roll. And I just was so angry and so hurt. No one knew how to hear me. They just didn't want to listen to the messy of my life. It's always better to just put, you know, a Jesus Band-Aid on the gaping wounds of complex trauma. And it doesn't work. And then we wonder why abuse continues so much. So when I was 17, a man came into my life, and he was amazing, and he listened to me, and he loved me, and he seemed like he really cared for me. And he asked me one day, you know, if you're already having sex, why wouldn't you want to get paid? And I thought, that is a damn good question. I have been giving it away since I was 4 years old. Why wouldn't I want to get paid? And he put me on the streets that first time, and my very first buyer, or John, I call him a trick because it's what my pimp always told me, is they're tricks. He picked me up, he used me, and as he was dropping me off, He ended up fighting me for my purse, and he ran me over in the process. And if I had been healthy, you know, I would have been dangerous, run away. But I had been prepared for that moment since I was 4 years old. And yeah, I just made $40 in like 3 minutes. And in 96, that's a big deal. And when I got in the back of that guy, who I loved very much, I got in the back of his car and he asked for the money. I had no clue what would happen when I handed over that $40, that from that moment on, every human right I had, from eating to drinking water to chewing gum to being able to talk to anyone, the way I looked, the way I dressed, everything was completely controlled by him. And he started moving me very, very fast from city to city, which keeps you disoriented. And finally, after about 14 or 15 months of, you know, turning 10, 15, 20, 30 tricks a day, and our bodies aren't designed to have sex that many times a day, so the not just mental trauma, but also physical. And I ran away from him, and it took me a couple months of planning, and I got away, but then I found myself 18 with nowhere to go and no one to help me, thinking exactly what my pimp always told me, once a hoe, always a hoe, that's all you're worth. And so I ended up staying in the sex industry as an empowered sex worker for another almost 3 years. But I want to challenge that thought a little bit, because with my empowerment is a matter of perspective. And when your perspective is slavery, the sex industry feels very empowering. And I know that's a hard concept, but at One Dream we work with both trafficking survivors and sex workers. If they're willingly there and they just need resources or they need that hand to hold and to help them, we will absolutely work with them and love them right where they are. And if they want to leave, we'll help them do that too. But we would never tell them what to do, because sometimes that is the most empowering place to be. And it's not my job or my role to judge. I think God's got the God thing pretty much taken care of, but he doesn't need a Jess by his side to help him.
Wow. Wow. So how did that change for you? How did you change your perspective from being empowered to something that you wanted to get out of?
Well, it takes a lot of time, and it's hard on your body and your brain, and there were a lot of drugs that I was doing. There was just a lot in play, and I ended up partying really hard one weekend, and I had crazy dreams about having a baby. I knew that I was pregnant. And I ended up going to a clinic, and I got that positive test. And that day, I walked away from everything. I quit doing drugs. I quit drinking.
Wow.
I cannot tell you how excruciating drug withdrawals and morning sickness are at the same time. And today, she is an amazing, almost 13-year-old. Last year, she was the president of her class. Of about 400 students. So she understands her role and her purpose in my life, and that she was given to me for a very specific reason. And
wow.
I needed a very strong child in order to help me wake up and understand that life is more than where I was.
What a special person. What is your name?
I would actually prefer to not say.
Of course. I'm so sorry.
Oh, no, it's okay.
I just was drawn, I was drawn to her, because it just sounds,
she's a
I love what you're telling me about her.
She's somewhere in personality, she's somewhere between a lawyer and a hostage negotiator. And she is exactly what I needed, and I do have to say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Yeah. Wow.
But
go ahead.
Oh, we never know what we're going to need And even though it's difficult, the most challenging times are actually what molds and changes our perspective so that we can see the world a different way. That sometimes when you're on the top looking down, it looks different than when you're on the bottom looking up.
Jess, when you were going through this, was there any, was there any time when you just despaired or you almost just totally lost everything, or was there a hope? Did you have some kind of hope through there?
Not really.
Wow.
There is rarely hope, and in fact, I spent most of those years completely disassociated, literally, wow, like hovering above myself. There is a darkness that is so thick that you can tangibly feel it on every portion of your skin that is alive. And unless, it doesn't have to be trafficking, it can be anything, any really dark time. But there's something about trauma that shapes who we are. And then what we do with that, because so many people just want to push the trauma away and never look at it because it's so painful. And yet there are incredible gifts that I got out of my trauma that once I was able to move past it, I can see that, wow, they shaped my experiences and my personality and enables me to do what I do today. And that is working with other survivors, developing an aftercare model that we're now implementing in Los Angeles. And really just working and loving and nurturing people in relationships, because relationships come down to the core of absolutely everything that we do.
Wow. Tell us a little bit about the aftercare program and One Dream Movement.
The organization is an organization on two legs. So we focus on both awareness and aftercare. And through awareness, we really do a lot through social media. So you can find us on Facebook, on Twitter, all the normal places. And once a person becomes aware of what trafficking is or just their interest is, and they're wanting to learn more, they're interested to speak, it's a great way to engage yourself. And then, we share lots of photos. So it's like you can share the photos with your friends, and it helps spread both sides, because we know it's an intense topic. So we share the encouragement also. On our website, we have survivor galleries, where they've done art and they share their stories. So it's a great way to just read and understand more of what we do. Aftercare is where I really come alive, and it's just nurturing each individual and meeting their needs as a person, rather than just saying, okay, you are a trafficking survivor, we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work that way. There's so many different types of domestic sex trafficking, and there's so many different types of sex workers that all their care has to be individualized. So we really just work with them to help them develop their own plan. It's their agenda, their way. We just really support and help find them resources.
Wow. So is this going on Laguna Beach?
I'm quite certain it is. It's funny. I cannot walk anywhere without some guy trying to pick me up. In the last couple months, I've spent a lot of time down in Orange County, and I could not imagine. Like, you get out of the car, you walk down the street or down a block, and the guys just immediately circle it. They're looking for it. It is so phenomenal to me, having just moved down here a few months ago from Portland, Oregon, as to how blatant it is here. It's much more hidden up in Portland. It is just absolutely blatant. We moved up into San Fernando Valley this last weekend, and literally a block and a half from our house, the first time I pulled out, there were three girls working on the corner, and two of them couldn't have been a day over 15.
Wow. And of course, you can see all this. You recognize this. We don't. You know, how can we be more aware of what's going on around us?
I would definitely start by going and looking at the website. Under the About tab is an entire page with a flip book. It's very easy to read, easy to navigate, about the issue and how to learn more and to understand more of the different types.
Mm-hmm.
Just really understanding what we're facing. So many organizations talk statistics, but statistics in this field are rarely accurate because we just don't have the research development. There, hospitals don't know how to identify trafficking. Law enforcement is just beginning to learn how to identify trafficking. So if they don't even know what it is, how are we going to have good, solid research on it?
Wow.
But in the media, we hear lots of terms like child prostitution, which is an oxymoron that can't even happen because prostitution implies willingness,
mm-hmm.
and a child cannot consent to sex. And some states it's 16, others it's 18, but they can't even consent to having sex until they reach a certain age. So having a child prostitute just isn't even possible. But yet that's how our media and our culture has defined it. So really it's just pulling back some of the veil on the sex industry. And I'm not saying that all, definitely, absolutely not all sex industry is trafficking. But trafficking is a huge part of the sex industry.
Hmm. What, Jess, what can we do? I mean, is there anything we can do? I'm thinking, like off my top of my head, if we're more aware, perhaps there are signs we can look at. I mean, my son's 14. He,
mm-hmm.
we live on a very popular street because there's skateboarding and there's surfing a few blocks away, and
mm-hmm.
we have over the weekend we had 14 kids in our house, right. All about 13, 14, 15 years old. I'm guessing that I need to learn about this because
Absolutely.
There's probably some things I can find out and maybe I could help someone. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think especially if you have young children around or teenagers, that
mm-hmm.
really prevention is always so much better than aftercare. I would much rather prevent it from ever happening than try to work with a survivor afterwards. Not that I don't love working with survivors, but preventing the problem is much preferable. And I think something happens in our adult brains when we hit about 30 and we quit listening to our children in the way that we used to. And there's something about being able to take ourselves back to what it was like to be a 14-year-old boy and just listen and hear them the way you wanted to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And it's building a different type of relationship where your children know they are affirmed and loved regardless of who they are, regardless of the decisions they make. And when they know they're loved and affirmed regardless of the decisions, they have a tendency to make better decisions. It's absolutely phenomenal that they would, when they feel secure in who they are and in their family unit, then they can make better choices because they're not
mm-hmm.
worried about what will happen at home.
Wow.
And so it's just so important to really build relationships with them where they're at. Something happens in the parent-child relationship, and so much of that seems to me becomes destroyed in the authoritative parent and the child. And we miss actually hearing our children and being a part of their life.
And Jeff, you should know what you're talking about. You know what you're talking about because you have, I understand, 5 children of your own, and
yes.
you just adopted number 6. Is that right?
That is correct. So they range from 21 to 2. And it is. It is a wild bunch.
We
call it our herd of children. We run in a herd.
And Jeff, tell me, because I was amazed at this, which is the one you adopted?
Our 21-year-old. Well, she was 20 when we started the process, has since turned 21. She was actually one of the survivors that I had been working with before One Dream, when I started to really test the aftercare model that is very different than most residential models that we see popping up today. She was one of the people that piloted the program, and she just fits so well in our family. And we all need parents. When I was 30, I lost my mother, and when I was 10, I lost my father. So, you know, being the ripe old age of 34, I still feel like an orphan. I don't have parents to call. I don't have parents to come over us to go to their house for Thanksgiving or Christmas. And, you know, we don't, my children don't have grandparents. And that is incredibly difficult. Just because we become of age doesn't mean we have a lack of need for a family. And so she has recently slowly started going public with her story, and you can actually read it in the Survivor Gallery. Her name is Sarah. It's Sarah Richardson, and she's on there. And she was actually trafficked by her biological family. And she, of course, through the process of relocation, needed a family, wanted a family. And for us, it's a way of just really practicing what we preach. Mm. That if we say people need family, sometimes you just got to put a whole lot of skin in the game and live by that example rather than just preach it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Because God knows I don't need a sixth child or a seventh or an eighth. But
wow.
You know, and we won't adopt them all. But Sarah is a very, very special person that just bonded with our kids and our other kids in our family really, really well. And she is ours for life.
I want to be in your family.
It's fun. We are very loud.
Well, that's great. That's the way I like it. Louder the better. We're probably getting close to being out of time here, but you know, we haven't, not because it's the last thing, but we haven't even discussed this. I know you're a believer. How does your faith play into this whole scenario? Can you just real quickly just give us a little bit of a picture?
That
of,
is a very
of your
loaded
spiritual
question.
Journey.
I have been so wounded by the church that we see so predominant today. I had pastors that were my regular clients. When I went public with my story, our church rejected us completely, our entire family. And now they play a video of my story to promote anti-trafficking events, and they've never made amends. They've never reached out to me, and we tried so hard. There has been so much damage done by religion that we live a different kind of faith. One Dream is not faith-based. And it's because so many other survivors share stories like my own that we can't come forward waving the Jesus banner. We have to truly, truly live it and let that light shine in the darkness. And people flock to the light. And it's not about being better. It's about just being real. And being honest and raw and open, and it has shaped our journey a lot. 11 years ago, when I first became a Christian, I had very different, much more evangelical style because that was the only model I knew of. I didn't know that there really was a relational way of living Christ rather than preaching Christ. And so it's changed everything. But the joy, he doesn't promise us a great life. He promises peace that surpasses understanding and courage to face our fears. That, if we can do that, we've got it covered, and we can go into the darkest of places.
Wow.
Those things have been my mantra.
Wow.
Oh. Well, thank you for this time. Everybody wants to talk about this, but thank you for being willing and allowing me to come on your show. I know it's heavy, but there's always joy.
Well, thank you, and I know that you've connected to a lot of our listeners, too, especially with that last piece of your story as well, because I think we have a lot of people who've been wounded by religion, and but that you have found the reality of Christ through a relationship with him, and then through just simply loving others in your family and the people you're working with. What a great model. I just admire you, and I'm so I think you're going about it the right way, as far as I can tell, and I'm excited. I want to find out more about it. I hope that a lot of our listeners will find out more, and who knows, maybe God will use some of us to help prevent this in the future, or maybe even spot someone that needs some help.
Absolutely.
And maybe even John, that we could possibly have her back again.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm someone who's been
touched
by this. Yes. And I'm sure there's many people that have been. And they have so many questions, like I do, John. You've got to repeat this. Give us an opportunity to be able to ask her questions. It's incredible to imagine someone, one of us, you know, or our daughter, or our granddaughter, actually experiencing something like this and not grasping it. We've all heard this prevention story and blah, 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 but what she said was that you can conquer the most horrific experience on earth that I couldn't possibly ever imagine anyway. And I need to know, how did it get to that? And how can I apply it to my life? You've got to come back.
Yeah.
You've got to come back.
Okay.
Yes.
I would love to come back.
Yes,
Can I add one more quick thing?
Please.
It's through the pain and the darkness that I felt, had I not been intensely suicidal, I would not have realized that I wanted something better. And it's through that gaping hole in my entire torso of pain and hurt that I felt my entire life, that once that was removed, I now think that people with intense trauma now have a greater capacity for joy. It's because there's this giant hole that needs to be filled with something, and once we take the darkness out, the light can just fill it completely. And
that perhaps us people living here in Chicago or New York or Atlanta or some very, very, we're all going to climb into some comfy blankets tonight. And we're not going to be able to sleep, none of us. But you're saying to me, I hear anyway, that I can take what your life experience has been, and I could take it and apply it to my next door neighbor.
Absolutely.
To be able to. Okay, thanks.
Absolutely.
I don't want to interrupt you. Keep going.
Go ahead, Jess.
It's all. The hope, the joy, the freedom, life is available to all of us. It's just a matter of whether or not we choose to grab it, comfortable where we're at. Mm-hmm. It's not easy standing in darkness. It's not fun dealing with trauma. It's not a joyful road in that. Where the joy comes in is that, yes, I hear the most horrific of stories, but I get to see the joy on the other side. I get to see the miracles that people say don't even exist anymore. It's because where there is the deepest darkness, there is also the equally bright light. And so you can't see the light shining. We're going to go right back full circle. You cannot see a bright light shining in the middle of bright light. You have to take the bright light to the darkness in order to see its glory.
Jess, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And we will have you back.
Okay. Well, have a wonderful evening, and thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. Gunnar, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Wow. That was something. I want to have her back again just to talk about life. She is so articulate.
Isn't she? I'll tell you, I've known Jess for several years now, and she truly is an amazing person, her family, entire family, and I couldn't be prouder of what she's doing right now. I mean, I remember the first time we sat down and had coffee and talking to her about some of this, I was just blown away at how articulate she was, and just it was just really, there were so many things I came away from. I had to just sit and ponder. You know, boy, there were so many takeaways from the conversation. It just, I had to really chew on it for a while. And I have a feeling that's happening right now with our audience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. I really do. What stuck out for you, Gunnar?
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. I think there was, I mean, the whole thing that, you know, at the end talking about, you know, light shining in light. I mean, that one really plays, but just some of the things, you know, that always amazes me with Jess when I've spent time with her is that it's all around us, you know, and being able to look for the signs and being able to educate ourselves on mm-hmm. what we can do and what to look for. And really even, and I think, and we'll talk about this, I think next week with our guest, Rick on just parenting and what we can be doing with our own children, you know, to help, you know, be preventative, yes. You know, and to affirm and the things like that. I mean, some of those things there really personalize it in so many ways.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's what came home to me when I'm, you know, so much aware of the kids that are around here and how much in the dark I am. So I'm just so glad that I had this exposure, and I can't wait to start to look more intently at the website and find out what it one dream
yeah one dream
one,
movement
one dream
drop,
movement
dot org
one dream and I, movement dot org
yeah and I think John I just say I think so many folks, you know, whether it's, you know, many people have seen the movie Taken with Liam Neeson or they hear about trafficking, it's like I think we go 0 to 60 miles an hour with our emotions. It's like, what do we do now that we've heard, now we're responsible? And I think definitely go to onedreammovement.org and get educated and find out what's going on and find out what you can do.
Great. Okay, Gunnar, tell us about next week.
Yeah, you know, in such a, you know, in just how life has it, right? We're going to be talking to the best-selling author, Rick Johnson. He's a best-selling author and speaker. His website is betterdads.net. I met Rick here recently at a daddy-daughter conference. How cool is that? I got to go. I got to go to a conference with my 15-year-old daughter, who happens to be in Rwanda right now. And we got to talk about, you know, how we can communicate with one another and how I can be a better dad and understand my daughter. And Rick's doing so many great things. He's got some great books, and I think really playing tonight, John, you know, after this conversation with Jess, you know, and talking about how we can be parents and better parents and an affirmation and such, I think this is going to be a very timely interview with Rick.
Great. I'm so excited. And I can't wait to this. It's just so, I am becoming enriched by the people that we're finding and folks, Gunnar's been responsible for, these people so far, and I just am so grateful for you and for bringing them to our attention, Gunnar. And
well,
I can't wait for next week.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think next week's going to be a great time, and you know, we're in this together. You know, John, a couple things we want to let the audience know is, you know, join us on Facebook, facebook.com/thecatch or at Fishback on Twitter or Marty_Fisher. You guys are there. You guys are active on there. And then, of course, you know, we have the Daily Catch, you know, at catchjohnfisher.wordpress.com. What have you been talking about this week, John, on The Catch?
Well, we've been talking about aspects still of the New Covenant. I love that theme. And coming out of Halloween, wearing masks and taking our masks off and finding out what we really are inside. And I think the verse that stands out for me to kind of close out everything tonight is in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, let light God, who said, let there be light in the beginning, is the one who has shown in our hearts to reveal the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Christ. Mm. And it's the same God who's brought light out of absolutely nothing. You know, we can't do that. We have to have a switch. Sort of like my oldest son, when he was little, always said, and that part of the creation story, he said, and God said, will someone please turn on the light? That takes a switch. And God doesn't need a switch. He doesn't need, he just speaks into the void. Mm. Like he spoke really into Jess's life, and like he's spoken into so many of our lives, let there be light where there was only darkness. And by the way, the lights are on now in our house. So from the darkness that we started this show, we now have light. Someone spoke into it, and God will speak into all of our lives in some special way this week. We pray and we look for what He can do through each one of us. It's His ministry. It's what He's doing in and through us that this is all about, and we just walk in an amazing state of amazement about it.
That's actually well said. Time to walk in, John.
I think that's it. I think we wish everybody good night, and I hope you will tell your friends about Blog Talk Radio, The Catch. And tell them to join us next week.
That's right, you know, and we'll have the link to this show. We'll post it on the website, Facebook, and Twitter here in just a short bit, so you can share it with all of your friends. Hey, John. Hey.
Yeah.
Have a great week. Have a great week.
Thank you. You too, Gunner. God bless everybody.
To The Catch with John Fisher on Blog Talk Radio, connecting life to faith.
The world is trying to get it together, trying to help their fellow man.